Okay, so it's midnight, and the patient that Alex introduced his talk to us with, BMI 52, comes in, is tachycardic, and has a bad belly. CAT scan shows diverticulitis with free fluid. Over the past couple of decades, people have popularized the technique of laparoscopic lavage. How many of you do that? Okay, so it's still fairly popular. Well, we have here Dr. Amy Leitner to educate us on this topic. She is from the Mayo Clinic, and we're so glad she could join us today.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Hall and Dr. Wise, for the invitation. And I will be presenting on laparoscopic lavage for complicated diverticulitis. So perforated diverticulitis, fortunately, only about 10% of our patients will actually present with a Hinchey class 3 or class 4. And Hinchey 3 is purulent peritonitis, and Hinchey 4 is feculent peritonitis. And when we see a Hinchey 3 patient, the primarily used surgical options are a resection with a Hartmann's or a primary anastomosis with or without diversion. But unfortunately, with these operations, our patients have significant morbidity and even mortality. And especially with the Hartmann's, a lot of these patients, their stomas will not be reversed, and so up to 70% will be left with a permanent stoma. So this leaves us really, we're looking for ways to improve patient outcomes. That's the goal. And how did we arrive with this concept of laparoscopic lavage? Well, when you look back, there's been a significant evolution in the way that we surgically manage diverticulitis. And as our first speaker already shared with us, you know, diverticulitis was first described back in the 1700s. The first resection for diverticulitis was actually done in 1907 at the Mayo Clinic. And 1910 was actually when lavage was first described. But through that time, up until the 1980s, we really used a three-stage approach for both a Hinchey class 3 and class 4. And then this evolved in the 1990s to a primary resection with or without diversion. And then in 1996, we see the first series of laparoscopic lavage. And that first series showed us that lavage should not be used in the Hinchey class 4. It was questionable in the Hinchey class 3. And then our own guidelines said there's no clear consensus. So when we look at the data, what did the initial case series show? These are the initial case series for laparoscopic lavage. Well, that first series that I mentioned came out of Ireland. There were 8 patients, and actually all of them had a normal recovery, returned to PO intake by day 5, and none of them needed a resection at 24 to 48 months. So fairly promising results. The next series actually was all the way out in 2008, so 12 years later. This was 100 patients, and you can see here, morbidity and mortality were low, so 4% and 3%. So much lower than that first slide I showed you of a Hartmann's or a resection. Only 2 represented with diverticulitis and 2 with a recurrent pelvic abscess. So again, promising results. And then there was this review of 12 studies published much later that compared a Hartmann and lap lavage, again showing the morbidity and mortality was quite low. But what we really needed were randomized controlled trials to evaluate this question of, is laparoscopic lavage a useful operative technique? And there were 3 randomized controlled trials, all done in 2015 and 16, all done in Europe. And again, conflicting results, and I want to go through them with you now. So the LOLA trial, this was in Belgium, Italy, and the Netherlands. It had 90 patients that were randomized to lap lavage or sigmoidectomy. Now their primary endpoint was a composite of major morbidity and mortality at 12 months. The DSMB, when they were reviewing their trial, actually terminated the study early, because they were finding so many patients needed re-intervention early, within 30 days. So many of them were going back to the operating room or needed drainage, but they had ongoing sepsis. And so they concluded that laparoscopic lavage was not superior to sigmoidectomy for purulent peritonitis of diverticulitis. So when you look at the data more closely, again, their short-term serious adverse events were significantly higher in the laparoscopic lavage group. And this was mostly related to surgical reintervention and abscess with drainage. So patients have ongoing sepsis. This was the problem in this trial. When you looked at their long-term serious adverse events, there was no difference. And when you looked at missed sigmoid adenocarcinoma, no difference. So the authors concluded that this persistent sepsis and their short-term outcomes being worse in the laparoscopic lavage group, they felt was related to missed Hinchey class 4 patients, so true Hinchey 4s being enrolled into the trial. The second trial, the Scandiv trial, again, patients were enrolled and randomized to lap lavage versus sigmoid resection. In this trial, the primary outcome was 90-day outcome, no difference in the outcomes at 90 days. But when you look at the secondary outcomes, the reoperation rate was significantly higher in the lap lavage group. However, lap lavage had more permanent stomas at a later time point. However, the authors concluded these findings do not support laparoscopic lavage because a lot of the patients had to undergo a reoperation or reintervention. The third of the randomized control trials, the Dilala trial, again randomized to lap lavage versus Hartmann's. And the short-term outcome data, the authors concluded that laparoscopic lavage was feasible and safe in the short term. When we looked at the one-year data, we can see the laparoscopic lavage group actually had fewer reoperations, a shorter length of stay, and fewer patients with an ostomy at 12 months. And again, the two-year data showed a similar outcomes, decreased reoperation, equivalent rates of readmission, and decreased stomas at 2 years. So the authors concluded that laparoscopic lavage is a better option for perforated diverticulitis with purulent peritonitis than an open resection and a colostomy. So we are left now with three randomized control trials, one of which says this is a good option, another which got terminated early and were really unsure because they didn't reach their powering endpoint, and another that says this is not a good option. So we're left with some pros and cons of laparoscopic lavage versus resection. We know that laparoscopic lavage avoids an emergency resection, may avoid more stomas, and it also minimizes wound infection without a big open incision. However, it does seem to increase the short-term morbidity, early need for reintervention due to ongoing sepsis, and then also this question of missed malignancy. So can the systematic reviews help us find the answer? Well, this was a big topic of systematic reviews, and there were actually several that came out all in 2017. But again, it's conflicting. Some showed this was safe and effective, others ineffective. Some a safe and quick alternative to do laparoscopic lavage, whereas another more peritonitis, abscesses, and need for emergency surgery. So again, conflicting data, leaving us without a clear answer. When we do look at the biggest systematic review of almost 600 patients, we do see this point reinforced again of this worsened short-term outcome. So more need for emergency reoperations at 30 days, more intra-abdominal abscesses, more peritonitis after surgery in the laparoscopic lavage group. So when we think about it, what is it that's going on and why isn't laparoscopic lavage more widespread in use? Is it the different interpretation of the data? Or is it that really laparoscopic lavage fits a very narrow window of our patients? So it really can't be widely applied. It's not something that fits all Hinchey 3s. So when we think about when to use laparoscopic lavage, and when we put ports in, and we irrigate with a lot of saline to remove all this purulent peritonitis and leave drains through our ports, we want to make sure the patient doesn't have a Hinchey 2. Because a Hinchey 2, you can drain with interventional radiology, put the patient on antibiotics, and consider a subsequent resection. The other important point that these trials made is exclude a Hinchey 4. So make sure these patients do not have feculent peritonitis because laparoscopic lavage will not control feculent peritonitis. And it's also important to remember the patient that comes in that's an older patient that may not have a scope in a while and has risk factors. You want to make sure that you exclude that this is an adenocarcinoma because up to 11% of patients that present with a Hinchey 3 or Hinchey 4 will actually have a sigmoid adenocarcinoma. And if you do use laparoscopic lavage in your practice, the patient postoperatively, you need to watch them like a hawk because there is a risk they're going to have ongoing sepsis and need for reintervention. They may need repeat CT scans, they may need additional interventional radiology procedures, and they certainly will need a colonoscopy. So they need to be very closely monitored. This is not for the patient with significant comorbidities that would not be able to tolerate the ongoing sepsis. So in conclusion, a laparoscopic lavage may result in fewer stomas and long-term need for surgery with a stoma reversal with the Hartmann's. However, the patient really needs to be a true Hinchey class 3, not a class 4. And we need to be aware that these patients do have increased rates of ongoing sepsis, need for reintervention, and also this question of increased risk of missed malignancy. So it's really a patient selection because not all patients are going to be able to tolerate the potential ongoing sepsis. So as most decisions in surgery that we make, it comes down to patient selection, the physician experience using laparoscopic lavage, and then also the patient expectations. Thank you.
Thank you.